I want to just remind everybody that we're having a big siyum, hashas, for women, and I want to encourage everybody to attend, all women who believe in women's learning, even if they're not doing it in an active way. It's going to be a massive event and not to miss event. 3,000 women are going to fill the halls of the room in Binyanei HaUma. It'll be a great program. We're spending a lot of time working on the program, working out the details. It'll be an event not to miss. Please mark down the date, January 5th, 2020. Chet B'Tevet. It'll be Sunday evening in Jerusalem. If you're abroad and you want to do an event in a local shul that will live stream to the event, please contact me. If you want to be part of our mailing list, please contact me. You can email me at Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at Hadran, H-A-D-R-A-N, .org.il. That's number one. And the second thing I want to just remind people that Daf Yomi for Women is supported by personal contributions from people. If you enjoy the shiur, if you use it regularly, if you want to keep it going, believe in it, want to support it, please consider contributing online. You can go to our website, dafyomiforwomen.org, and there's a donate button, and feel free to contribute. The donations are not tax deductible, but they go directly to supporting Daf Yomi for Women. Today we're learning Erechin Daf Kaf Gimel. We're going to start right at the top. Hamachdish nichasav, vayta lav ketubat isha. And now we have a case. Somebody dedicates all of his property to the Beit HaMikdash. But he had a ketubah of a woman that was upon him, meaning, right, he had to pay his wife her ketubah money. So now at this point, right, we always say that the nechasim are mishuabadim to the ketubah, meaning the property is already leaned to the ketubah. So theoretically, he couldn't really give it to Hekdesh because he owed the money. So he was makdish all of his nechasim. But he had to pay his wife the ketubah money. So theoretically, he can take the ketubah money from the Hekdesh. However, there's a bit of a problem. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Chishe Yigarshena, if he divorces her in order to get the ketubah money from the Hekdesh, okay, Yidor Hana'ah, he has to make a vow that he will not ever benefit from his wife anytime in the future. Why? There's a concern that he regrets that he was makdish the property and he wants the money back. So what does he say to his wife? He says, oh, let's pretend we're getting divorced. We'll go through the divorce proceedings. We'll get the money back from the Hekdesh. Then we'll get back and get remarried and we'll share the money. Okay? So,
you know, if he's regretting it, then maybe it's not such a bad thing that he has a way to...
Has a way out? Okay, so that's a good question. So we'll see. I mean, we'll talk about it in another few minutes. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Eino Tzarich. He doesn't need to... Right? The pshat of Rabbi Yoshua is, we're not worried that someone's going to go so far as to do that. Now, again, it's always a question. We've spent a lot of time throughout Shas dealing with people who might trick and who might take advantage. How much do we have to be concerned and make everybody who goes to divorce their wives, and now again, I don't know how many people are makdish all their nechasim to the Beit HaMikdash, but still, if someone were to do that, are we going to go so far as to make them take a vow they're never going to, you know, they're not going to get any benefit from this woman anymore? I can't. Kayotze, later the Gemara is going to give four possibilities to what exactly the machloket's about, okay? Amar Rashbag, Kayotze B'davar, likewise, Amar Rashbag, Af Ha'arev L'isha B'Ketubata, likewise, if you had someone who guaranteed the ketubah, okay, guarantor for the ketubah, V'haya Ba'ala Megarsha, and again, the husband divorces the wife, Yidirena Hana'a, we're also worried in this case, Shema Yaseh K'nunya Al Nechasim Shalzeh V'Yachzoret Ishto. We're worried that maybe, since there was a guarantor, he could do the same thing, just like for Hekdesh. He could do the same thing with the guarantor for the ketubah. He could say, hey, let's get divorced. We'll get the money out of this guy. I'll refuse to pay because I have no money anyway. We'll be able to collect it from the guarantor, and we'll split it 50-50. We'll get back remarried, and, you know, we'll all be one and the same, right? It'll be your money, my money. All will be good. So, therefore, we have to be concerned. Later, the Gemara is going to say, if you notice, there's two cases brought here. There's someone who's makdish and someone who has a guarantor. What if he sold the property to someone? It doesn't mention that in the Mishnah. We'll have to talk about whether that would be the same or not. So the Gemara starts off with my kamiflege. What's the root of their machloket? So very simply, like we said, Rabbi Lezer Savara, Adamo seknunya la hekdesh. It's theoretically possible that somebody would do this conspiracy type act even on hekdesh, since you might think, on hekdesh, no one's going to do that with hekdesh. Maybe to a fellow man, but not to Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yeshua Savar, Ein Adam Osek Nunya LaHekdesh, says Rabbi Lezer is worried about the possibility that someone would do it. And Rabbi Yeshua says, we're not worried anyone's going to do that. Ve'ela hada amar Rav Huna, Shchiv Meira, Sheikdish Kon Chasav, Amar Mane Leploni Biyadi, Ne'eman, Chazaka Ein Osek Nunya LaHekdesh. Lema Kitanai Amar Lashmate? Now we bring in the statement of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, according to what we just said, there's a machloket. Would you do a kinyan hekdesh or not? So it's a machloket tanai. Rav Huna now comes and says that if you're lying on your deathbed and you say, I'm giving all my possessions to the Beit HaMikdash, but then he says, however, there's some hundred, there's a maneh that is owed to so-and-so. So he's believed, and we take that and we give it to the person. Why? Because we're not worried. Chazaka, we have a chazaka that ain't osek nunya lehekdesh. People don't make a knunya lehekdesh. So this seems to, now the Gemara is going to say, lema ketanai amar lishmate? Are we to assume that Rav Nachman, and they don't really like, not Rav Nachman, Rav Huna, are we to assume that Rav Huna is only holding like Rabbi Yoshua in this machloket and not Rabbi Eliezer? Okay, for whatever reason, I'm not exactly sure why, because generally we don't really have such a problem if Emoraim hold by one side of a Tana'itic debate. But for some reason, it's bothering them here that he would only hold like Rabbi Yeshua, and that he's saying something very simply that's really a subject of a Tana'itic debate. So therefore, the Gemara assumes, okay, we're now going to have to answer, what's the difference between the case of the Shchiv Meira and the case of our Mishnah? Because theoretically, it's the same. It's Hekdesh, and would you do this conspiracy on the Hekdesh or not? So the Gemara answers, lo. No, don't worry about that case. Ad kan lo pligi ela bibari. Okay, and this is the second chart on the page. We're going to have four cases to explain, four possibilities, what case they agree about and what case they disagree about. When it comes to a healthy person, okay, we're now going to distinguish. Rav Huna was a case of a Shchiv Meira. He was lying on his deathbed. We're going to distinguish between him and a regular person. So when it comes to the Shchiv Meira, it's obvious. Rav Huna is actually saying it according to everybody. Nobody thinks he's doing a conspiracy there. The debate in our Mishnah is if he's a healthy person and he was Makdisha's Nechassim and now divorces his wife, are we concerned that he's divorcing her just to get the money back from the Hekdesh? So, what we say here is like this. Divrei hakol, akan lo pligi ela bibari. Aval b'shchiv mera, divrei hakol ena damosek nunya la Hekdesh. Now, why would everyone agree in a Shchiv Meira case? This is just logical. Or human nature, my taima, ein adam chote velo lo. The guy's about to die. Any benefit he would get from this money wouldn't really benefit him. So if he's getting no direct benefit from it, he's not gonna lie. He's not gonna do a knunya la hektesh to basically, it's interesting. You might think, right, people on their deathbed, maybe you're very worried about their future and their children. But no, we say they're not gonna start doing a conspiracy just to get back at their children, you know, just to get money for their children. No. For themselves, they would. But not if it's not going to benefit them. And therefore, we're not worried on his deathbed that he's going to lie. I think it's also connected with, when you're lying on your deathbed, you feel like it's the end of your life. You don't want to, generally people do tshuva at that point and don't start doing wrongdoings. So I think that also is factors in here possibly, even though the Gemara doesn't say so. Okay, so therefore, we distinguish. Shchiv Meira, Rav Huna, don't bring that as a question. That was a Shchiv Meira case. Our case is a Bari case. We could see there's two sides. Would someone do it or would he not do it? Ika da Amre, some people say, Bibari de Kuleyama lo pligi. Actually, in a Bari case, also everybody agrees. What do they agree? Notice there's a problem with the Girsa. Either they agree to Ain or they agree to Adam. But generally, we're going to assume it's like the correction here, which is, Da Adam osek nunya la hektesh. Dafka people would cheat the Hekdesh to get their money back. The hacha, what's the machloket here? B'neder shehu dar b'rabim kamiflege. Their machloket is about a neder that someone takes in public. Mar savar yesh lo hafara, umar savar ein lo hafara. Can you undo a neder that you took in public? So now, if you say you can undo it, well then, yidor hana'ami ishto is not going to actually help you because it can easily be undone. He can just do hatarat nedarim And therefore, he can actually do a knunya, right? Since we're worried that Adam would do a knunya, he could do a knunya. The fact that he's mudar hana'ah from his wife won't prevent him from remarrying her in the future because he could just undo the neder. So that seems like a good solution, right? So basically, that's Rabbi Yoshua, who says, you don't need to be mudar hana'ah because it's not going to help you anyway. He could always undo it. According to Rabbi Eliezer, yador hana'ah mishto, because a neder shudar rabim, you'd have to assume, by the way, that he can only yigarshena birabim. When he divorced her, he has to be moder hana'ami, and he has to make a neder in public. Okay, because then it can't be undone, and that would be a good solution. Okay, so they both think you have to worry about a knunya. Just Rabbi Yeshua says there's nothing you can do about it. In other words, there's no way to prevent it. And v'ibay deima. Alternatively, one could say, and we've seen this debate before, about whether a neder hudar b'rabim is there a machloket, or does everyone agree it actually can be. To kule alma neder shudar b'rabim yesh lakar. Everybody agrees if you make a public neder, you can actually undo it. V'hacha b'neder shudar aldat rabim kamiflege. But here we're talking about a neder that someone said, not only did he do it in public, but he said, I'm taking it on the knowledge of the public. In other words, it's a stronger lashon of a vow. And that's the vow we're talking about. He's no dar hana'ah. And then there's a machloket, right? Yesh lo hafara or ain lo hafara. Okay, and then again, it fits exactly like we said before. Rabbi Eliezer would say, neder shudar al dat rabim ain lo hafara, which is why this is a good solution. And Rabbi Yeshua says no. By the way, if we explain it like this, the eino tzarich of Rabbi Yeshua is not what we thought before. We've thought before that he's really not worried about a knunya. Now we're saying, no, he is worried about a knunya, and he just thinks there's no solution. Okay? This is when, once you start reinterpreting things, your original understanding of things could be very different from what we thought. You know, your eventual understanding could be very different than what we originally thought. But then we have another problem, and this is just like we did with Rav Huna before. According to that, if you say neder shudar b'rabim, that's the machloket. Hada amar ameimar, neder shudar b'rabim yesh lo hafara, al da'at rabim ein lo hafara, lema kitanai amar l'shmate. First question is, if a Maimar made the following statement, he said, if you do it in public, you can undo your neder. But if you do it al dat the public, then there's no hafara, you can't undo it. Are you going to say that what he said was also a Tana Itik debate between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and that's really what their machloket is? Doesn't make so much sense to say that. Vitu, and additionally, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Einot Tzarich, the Lashon of Rabbi Yeshua, Einot Tzarich. Einot Tzarich sounds like, why did we think Einot Tzarich meant what we thought in the beginning? Einot Tzarich means there's no need, we're not concerned, you're going to do a conspiracy. Einot Mo'il Mibayle. If you wanted to say that a neder shudar al dat rabim will not work, then it should say, Einot Mo'il, it won't work. It won't help you, okay? And not, you don't need to do it. Okay, and therefore, the wording doesn't match this interpretation. So they reject this interpretation, and then they say, so they rejected, you know, number two and number three. Now they say, Elahacha b'she'ela dehekdesh kamiflegei. We're not worried about undoing the neder, that's not the machloket. The question is, can you undo hekdesh? If you give something to hekdesh, and then you realize later that you made a mistake, can you go to a chacham and say, listen, I made a mistake, I didn't realize, you know, and undo it? Well, if you say you can undo it, that's Rabbi Yeshua, who says, we're not worried you're going to do a knunya, a conspiracy, because there's an easier way to get the money. Think about it. To start going through a whole divorce proceeding with your wife is not the easiest thing on the planet. So if you really want the money back, you'll just go to a chacham and say, listen, I made a mistake. I never really meant to be makdish al menachasi, and you can undo it. According to Rabbi Lazer, can't be done. If it can't be done, then we're worried the only way he can get his money is by divorcing his wife and getting the ketubah money from the hekdesh, and therefore we're concerned that he'll do this, and therefore we make him take a neder, that he won't remarry his wife. Okay. Now they're going to bring a bright to the show that there's actually, that not only does this sound like a good answer, but this must be the right answer because we have a brayta that says that that's exactly what their machloket's about. The Hatanya, here's a brayta. Hatanya could be the Hareka to be brayta as a question, which is often used, but sometimes the Hatanya means Hareka to be brayta. Behold, it says in a brayta exactly this. Hamakdish nechasav, so in the beginning it's going to sound exactly like our Mishnah. Vahita lab ktubat isha, and there was a woman's ketubah that was owed from that. Rabbi Lezer, Omer, Keshehumik, Arshah, when he divorces her, and then she's going to get her ketubah money, Yidor Hana'ah, he has to promise that he won't get any benefit from her so that he won't remarry her and, again, avoid this knunya. Rabbi Yoshua, Omer, no tzarich. Rabbi Yoshua says there's no point, there's no need. Ba'amar, here comes the Braita, the continuation of the Braita that's important, because so far that was just a repeat of our Mishnah. Va'amar, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, hein, hein, divrei Beit Shammai, hein, hein, divrei Beit Hillel. Rabbi Lezer matches Beit Shammai. You can see why. He's got the more harsh opinion and or also suspect of human beings, what they might do. And Rabbi Yeshua matches Beit Hillel. Now, what's the Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel machloket? It tells you in the Braita. She Beit Shammai omrim, hekdesh ta'ut, hekdesh. If you did hekdesh by mistake, it's hekdesh. Tough luck. There's nothing you can do about it. And that matches Rabbi Lezer, who says you can't undo it. And since you can't undo it, we're worried if you want to get your money back, the only way you could do it is this creative solution. Ubeit Hillel omrim, hekdesh ta'ud eino hekdesh. And Beit Hillel dafka says, if you make a mistake and you mistakenly sanctify something and you realize later you should never have done that, you can undo it. And therefore, again, Rabbi Yeshua now matches perfectly. Eino tzarich, there's no need, because we're not worried someone's going to do a conspiracy with his wife on this, because he's got a much easier way to get out of it. Okay, v'chein haya, so that's very interesting. It sounds like, right, for sure, according to what we said before, nobody thinks that one should do a knunya, right? Everyone would agree that until so far what we've learned, it definitely would not be ideal or not be a good, you know, no one would suggest that someone, if they wanted to get their money out of hekdesh, they would do a knunya with their wives, right, and do this solution. Okay, I'm setting this up specifically because we're now going to have an interesting story in light of this. So hekdesh for sure not, but now the Mishnah continued and talked about an arev, right? Are we worried again the same thing? If someone guarantees your ketubah, and then are we concerned when you divorce your wife that maybe you're just trying to get the ketubah money out of the guarantor? You don't have the money to pay the ketubah, so you're not going to pay it back. So you divorce your wife so that she can collect the ketubah money from the guarantor. Then you'll go back and remarry her, and great. You know, a little bit reminds me of someone breaks an engagement and they got these gifts, you know, what do they do with them? Do they need to return them, right? Okay. My parents have a good story about it. It's a business friend that they bought a very expensive gift for when he got engaged, and then I think he even got married and got divorced right away, and then, you know, he got married again. I think he got married like three times. The second time, they're like, okay, not getting an expensive gift this time. Okay, so now, what is Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer? So, or he says, you have to worry that they're going to do a knunya on the arev. Moshe bar Atzri, arva dekal tehava. Moshe bar Atzri was an arev for his daughter-in-law, meaning he was an arev for her ketubah, which really means what? He guaranteed the son's ketubah for his wife. Okay? V'Rav Huna b'rei, then Rav Huna was his son, okay? Was it tzur v'merabanan hava? We know that, right? He was a tamid chacham. Udechik alein milta. Actually, I'm not sure if this is the Rav Huna that we know. But it might not be the famous Rav Huna. I didn't check this out. Anyway, dechik alei milte. He had no money. Okay? He was very poor. Amar Abaye. Abaye said, Leika dinasbe eitza l'Rav Huna? Why isn't anyone giving Rav Huna the following advice? And you're going to be shocked by what he suggests. Rav Huna is very poor. He's got no money. What should someone suggest to him to do? You wonder why Abaye didn't suggest it himself. Dili garish l'debitu, that he should divorce his wife. Okay, instead of going to the father and asking for a loan, right, or for some money, like many people ask their parents, what should he do? Obviously, the father wasn't so forthcoming in trying to help out his son. So he says, why don't you divorce your wife? She'll demand the ketubah from the father, who is the guarantor of the ketubah. Ule hadre mi hadre, and then he'll remarry her. Sounds like a great solution. Why didn't anyone offer this advice to Abaye? So that's why I set it up before, as it was quite obvious that no one suggests you should do a knunya. And yet Abaye comes here and says, why isn't anyone giving him this advice? So we can have a lot of issues with Abaye here. First question is Rava. Okay, generally Rava and Abaye disagree. Amarle Rava, v'ha'anan yidor hana'atna. Don't we say in our Mishnah that if you do it with an arev, you have to be noder hana'am yisho, and he can't remarry her. So what does Abaye say? Abaye's great answer. Abaye, I don't know if he answers this or someone answers for him. Atu called him a garish, but Beit Din a garish? Does everybody who divorces go to the Beit Din to divorce? In other words, what does it mean, Yidor Hana'ah? It means, when you go to the Beit Din to get divorced, In these kind of cases where there's an arev or where there's or you were maktish al yunachasim, the Beit Din will force you to be noder hanamishto. So comes Abaye and he says, who's to say he has to go to the Beit Din? I would have someone recommend he divorce his wife, take care of it in front of, you know, a few people, do it the way it has to be done, but you don't actually have to go to a Beit Din. Now, obviously, nowadays, everyone goes to a Beit Din to do it. But he's saying, theoretically, you know, it doesn't say in the Torah you need to do it before a Beit Din. Just have him divorce his wife, give her a get, b'fnei Eidim, and be done with it. And nobody will force him, lidor ana'ah, because nobody will know. You know, the court's not involved. Okay? So that's the first question, the first answer. Well, before we get to more questions on Abaye, we're going to finish the story. Lesof, in the end, though, you can imagine, this is, Abaye says, why don't we suggest to do this? Rava says to him, you can't suggest him, because as soon as he goes to divorce her, they're going to make him be noder ana'ah. And Abaye says, no, he can just divorce her outside the court. Lesof, but in the end, Abaye looked further into it, and he gali milta de kohen hava. Oh, he was a kohen. Well, now, what's the problem? A kohen can't be machzir grushato. He can't get divorced and then remarry her because she's a divorcee, and a kohen can't marry a divorcee. So therefore, they couldn't give him this advice. Okay, so theoretically, they could have, but they couldn't because he was a kohen. Amar Abaye, so what's Abaye's reaction to this? Famous statement of Abaye. Batar Anya Azla Aniyuta. Right? Nebuch people have a lot of Nebuch things happen to him, them. Okay? In other words, this poor guy already is so poor, and now he doesn't even have a good solution for how to rectify his situation. It's very apropos that Abaye say this, because Abaye, if you remember, he lived a very impoverished life, and he was adopted because his mother died in childbirth. His father died before that, after his mother got pregnant, and he had a very rough life, and he always kind of looks at life in these kind of statements, like, you know, people who have it bad have it really bad. Okay, so now we're going to question Abaye. Umi amar Abaye hacha? Could Abaye really have said this? Now, instead of just assuming, how could Abaye say such a thing, we're even going to bring a proof from a different place where Abaye says, don't offer evil advice or tricky advice. Don't offer people to be tricksters within halacha, right? To use these loopholes, like he suggested. Bahamar Abaye appears in Sota and a few other places. Ezehu Rasha Arum. I think if I remember correctly, the Mishnah in Sota called someone a Rasha Arum. And Abaye explains, who is a Rasha Arum? Zeha Mesi Eitzah Linkor B'Nechasim K'Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel. Someone who offers someone advice to sell Nechasim, like Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel suggests. What's the case? If I say, when I die, I'm giving my money to so-and-so, okay, or I'm giving a piece of my property to a specific person, but when they die, I want them to give it to somebody else. Meaning that when they get it, it's not theirs to give to their own children, because I already specified this is the order of what's going to happen to it. It's going to go first to person A. From that person, it's going to go to person B. Now, if person A really wants to have the money and wants to have it forever in his family's property, what does Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel say? Well, it's only the property that has to, or you know, specifically the item. But if he were to sell the item, since right now he owns it, once, let's say, I die, he owns the item now. So while it's true it's supposed to go to so-and-so when he dies or she dies, but at the moment, they have rights to sell it. So they could sell it, in which case they won't have it anymore to pass on to the second person. So Abaye says a Rasha Arum is somebody who suggests to the second middleman to sell the item so that all of the money will stay within his family. That's a Rasha Arum. Well, if he says that, then how can he offer Rav Huna this advice? Sounds crazy. So we give two answers. Birei Shane, number one, it was a knunya on his father. In other words, here was a case with a father and son. I think what he's really saying is the father, and maybe this is interesting, it's Abaye who has no father. And I think when he sees this situation where someone does have a father and the father's not acting like a father, taking care of him, he felt like we should do anything and, you know, to wake up this father and realize these are your responsibilities. And therefore, because he was his son, it's a different situation. Okay? You can do a knunya on your father. Vit Surva Me Rabbanan Shane. This is interesting. It's not exactly clear why this is the case. But because he's a Tamei Chacham, this is allowed. I guess we're worried. We don't want to give Eitzot to people who will abuse it. But if he's a Tamei Chacham, he'll know how to use it properly. Okay. So then they say, wait. Vitepukle da Arev de Ketuba lo Mishtabe. But wait, we have a separate problem here. In Arev on a Ketuba, the property is not leaned, actually. The guarantor is not actually supposed to pay back the ketubah. We're going to learn later, and the Gemara is going to say that the reason somebody becomes a guarantor for a ketubah is not because, okay, this is very interesting. We're going to learn about arivut in general. When you sign a guarantee for someone's loan or whatever it might be, so the Gemara is going to challenge whether you really meant it or not. Okay? Did you really mean it, or did you have ulterior motives? And what, generally, if you ask someone to sign to guarantee, let's say, you know, your mortgage, does that person really think that they're going to pay your mortgage? Absolutely not. They have no, right? They don't sit there worrying every day, oh, maybe that person's going to not pay their mortgage and I'm going to have to pay, at least in many situations, right? You're not really concerned. And therefore, you didn't really mean it when you signed it. So according to halacha, if you didn't really mean it, well, then you're not really obligated. So according to this, they're going to say that an arev, specifically for a ketubah, when it comes to a property, maybe you would be. But for a ketubah, you're not. Why? The assumption is you wanted the people to get married, and therefore you were willing to say, I'll be an arev for the ketubah so that the woman would agree to marry the man. Okay? You did it out of good nature, right? You wanted the marriage to go through. So they say if the father was a guarantor, we know that a guarantor of a ketubah was just doing it to encourage the wedding and isn't really responsible at all, in which case you can't actually legally get the money out of the father. So again, how can a bias suggest this? So the answer is kablan hava. He was a kablan. There's two different types of things. There's one as an arev, as a guarantor. And generally we learned that when it comes to a guarantor, you can only go to the guarantor after you went to the lova and the, you know, or whoever it is that owes the money and they're not paying up. But a kablan is someone who says, I'm going to guarantee this loan or whatever it might be, in this case the ketubah, and you can come directly to me to get the money. That's already the person taking on more responsibility. So you'd have to assume that the father, in this case, was a kablan for the ketubah. And that's why he suggested that they go to the father, right? They do the divorce and then they could go to the father. So now they say, wait a minute though. This only works according to some opinions because there's a debate about a kablan in particular situations. Again, even with a kablan, it's not 100% clear that he really meant it. Hani chalamanda amar, it works according to the one who holds the kablan apagav deleitle nechasim lelove mishtabed. Even if, okay, we're now going to assume, now which case would you think a kablan would be more likely to take on the loan on himself? If the person he was doing it for had no money, or the person he was doing it for had money? What would you think? Yeah. If he had money, it would be more likely
that he would be the kablan.
That he would be serious about it, right. And if the lova doesn't have money, then he wasn't really serious, he was just trying to help the guy to get a loan. But he really wasn't taking responsibility because he said, I don't want to take responsibility, this guy is never going to pay back his loan, I'm going to be stuck paying it. He wasn't really serious. So there's a debate about that. Some people say, no, it doesn't make a difference. But if you say, kablan af agav delele nechasim lelove mishtabe, then it would work. In other words, even if the lova had no money, because what's the assumption here? Rav Huna had no money. So it's a case where Rav Huna had no money. He said, I'm guaranteeing as a kablan. So if you say, even if Rav Huna had no money, he's still mishtabe, then it makes sense what you're saying. But ela lamanda amar itle mishtabe lele lo mishtabe. But if you say that only if the person had the money, was he really serious about it? Otherwise, for sure he wasn't serious. There's no way he was planning to really pay it back. Ma'ika lememar, what could you answer? How could you explain this case? So, ibayt ema, a few possibilities. Either Rav Huna havalei v'ishtaduf. At the time he wrote the ketubah, Rav Huna actually did have money. And that's why the father was mishabed himself to the loan, because he knew his son had money. But then he lost his money, okay? And now he's poor. Maybe that was the case. V'bayt ema, aba legabe brei, shi'abde mishabe nafshe. Or maybe again, it's a father for his son. Normally, a regular kablan wouldn't guarantee the loan if the person had no money, but a father would guarantee his son's loan or his son's obligation in a case where he has no money. Okay, now we're going to see this machloket. We're going a little backwards. Where's the machloket about whether he has the money or doesn't have the money? De'itmar, arev diktuba. Okay, now we're going to have, okay, this is the last chart on the page, on my sheet. Arev diktuba. We're going to have a few different categories. And arev for ketuba, divrei hakol lo mishtabed. Everyone agrees that arev on a ketuba is not mishtabed. Okay, because this is what we're going to see inside in a minute, but he obviously did it just to get them married. Kablan de bal chov, but someone who took on more responsibility when it comes to a bal chov, divrei hakol mishtabed. Everyone agrees that he is mishtabed. Okay, if you're a kablan of a regular loan, for sure you're mishtabed. arev de baal chov, but the in-between cases where there's a machloket is if you're an arev for a loan or a kablan diktuba, kablan for ktuba, pligi. Then there's a machloket. Eat leman, ika leman damar, some of them say, eat le nichse lelove mishtabed, lately lo mishtabed, it depends whether they have money or not. The ika leman damar, afa gav de lately mishtabed. And some of them say, even if the person didn't have money, since he was number one in an arev for a baal chov, that's enough to say he was really guaranteeing the loan. Or when it comes to a ketubah, you need to be the higher level of a kablan, because again, right, that right, we'll see in a second why inside. My taima, sorry, I skipped. Behilchita bekulhu, okay, the halacha is, because there's a machloket, in all of these cases, af agav delately nami mishtabed, all of these cases, even if the person doesn't have money, the kablan or the arev of the baal chov actually is mishtabed, okay, he is responsible. Levar me arev diktuba, the only exception is the case we said in the beginning, arev diktuba, everybody agrees, is not mishtabed. To afa gav de itle lo mishtabed, because even if he has the money, he's not mishtabed. My taima mitzvah ka'avid velo midi chasra. Okay, there's two things here, right? It's a mitzvah to get married, right? And therefore he wants to get them married, and therefore he's agreeing to do this. And lo midi chasra. This is another important criteria. He's guaranteeing, okay, when you guarantee a loan, what happens? The mal that puts out money, and you're guaranteeing he'll get his money back. Why is a ketubah different? The woman doesn't put out any money. She doesn't put up money and say, I'm going to get my money back in the event of divorce. She's just getting, you would say, something for nothing. I mean, it's not for nothing. She's getting married to the guy. She has obligations to him. But theoretically, she's not putting up any money. So therefore, the guarantor of the loan is less likely to guarantee anything because he's not protecting her from a loss. Right, he's protecting her from not getting money in the future, but not anything she already put out money. When it comes to a mal, then we'll agree, put out money. So that's another criteria here that comes into play with the ketubah.
Michelle, yeah. Do you not need a ketubah for a second marriage?
You do need a ketubah for a second marriage.
So if the guy's going to remarry his wife, who would guarantee it?
He'll be stuck. He won't have a guarantor for the ketubah.
The
question is, do you need to have a guarantor for the loan, for the ketubah? It's a good question. First of all, second marriage is it's less money. Because she's not a betula. Betula is 200 zuz, and a second marriage is 100 zuz. So, yeah. That's another reason. Okay. Now we're going to have another case. Okay, so now, fine. So we're finished with that. Now we're going back. I told you when we read the Mishnah, there were two cases. One, he was makdish all his nechassim. And number two, he had a guarantor for the nechassim. So now, what about a case where somebody sold his nechassim, presumably after he had already married his wife, and therefore the ketubah was leaned to the property, so therefore he bought property that was already leaned, v'kagarsha l'debitu, and now he divorces his wife, and he wants to get the ketubah money from the land that he sold. So again, should we be worried about a kenunya? Now, it doesn't say this in the Mishnah. It doesn't bring this case. So shalcha Rabbi Yosef b'rei de Rava l'kamei de Rav Papa, arev tnan, hektesh tnan, lokeach mahu. Talks about an arev in the Mishnah, talks about hektesh, but what about a lokeach? What about someone who bought the land? Amar lei, so he answers him back, where Papa answers him, Tana ki ruchla nichsha v'nezal, this comes up a bunch of times. Do we view the Tana as a rochel, as a peddler, that he counts everything? In other words, just because he said those two, obviously he meant anything similar to it, and it's not the Mishnah's job to specify every single case, right? We're supposed to use our own logic and say, it's there, it must be the same there. So he would say it would apply also to a lokech. Naharde Amre, but in Naharde, city in Babel, they said, ditnan tnan, dilotnan lotnan. If it says it in the Mishnah, then that's the case. If it doesn't say it in the Mishnah, well, that's not the case. When they say, a lokech, it wouldn't be the same case, you wouldn't have to be no derhana'a from your wife. So we're not worried about you doing this knunya. So Amarav Masharshia, my time at Naharde. Really, what's behind their reasoning? Bishlam a hekdesh, mishum revach de hekdesh. Arev nami mitzvu David. And as by hekdesh and by arev, there's a specific thing that we're worried about. Number right, we want to protect, number one, the hekdesh, because it's hekdesh, right? We don't want to cause a loss to the mikdash. When it comes to the arev, he was doing a favor for someone, right? By guaranteeing the loan, he was doing a big favor. We want to protect him. V'lav midi chasra. And also, she wasn't even losing anything, right? He was particularly nice. He was guaranteeing this. Ela lokeach michti meida yada dechol chavachadi kale ketuba. When the lokeach bought this property, he knew very well that everybody's got a ketuba, and that obviously the ketuba would be leaned to his property, and therefore, why should he buy it? In other words, he should have been smart enough when he bought it to know that it was probably leaned to the ketubah, and he knew to expect this, in which case he put himself in the situation, and he knew. In other words, in all these cases, on the one hand, we're worried that the guy's going to lie and cheat. It's also we're worried about protecting the person he might potentially cheat. In other words, if there's a certain small percentage of a chance that the guy's a liar and a cheater and he's going to fake everybody out, it's a matter of, well, how much is pulling on the other side? It's only a little bit that we're worried about him cheating, but the question is, do we have to protect the person he's going to cheat? So in the first two cases, we definitely have to protect them. Now, Haradiah says when it comes to a buyer, he knew already that the tuba might come out, and therefore it's his problem. Okay, new Mishnah. Hamakdish nechasav v'ayta alav ketubat isha. So somebody, it's very similar to the previous Mishnah, someone's makdish's property, and there was a ketubat isha, you know, lean to it. Ubal chov, and bal chov, okay, he had that, and he owed money. Ein ha'isha yechola ligbok ketubatam in a hekdesh, v'lo bal chov et chovo. You can't just directly take it from the hekdesh. Okay, now this is interesting. So there's a machloka Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi says that nechasim that have a shibud on them, okay, like this property obviously had a shibud, right? It was leaned to the ketubah or to the loan, and yet he was makdishit. So the question is, does the hekdesh work or not? So according to Rashi, you actually can't be makdishit. Okay, well, if you can't be makdishit, then what's the problem? Well, the problem is, Rashi says, we don't want people thinking that you can, that people see that you were makdish this, and they see now that you were treating it as chulin, so they'll think that you can just easily say, oh, forget my hekdesh, and turn something into chulin. So it's more, I would almost say, like a marat ayin problem. We're worried that what people might learn from this, and therefore. The Rambam says, no, actually, you can be makdish items that have a shibud, and this hekdesh really worked, okay? But then, okay, I'll get to the solution in a minute, and we'll see how each one works out. Okay, what they're basically going to say is there's an easy solution out of this. So either you say there's an easy solution out of this because Rashi says really there's no problem because theoretically, according to law, right, it's not even hekdesh. The Rambam says it is hekdesh, but the rabbis were made a takana to make it easy for you to get out of this because you have to pay back. So it's kind of, you know, two opposite directions of how you approach it. So now, what do we say? Ela ha-podeh podeh. Someone can come and redeem it. It's not even clear who this is. It's strange. Lashana podeh podeh. Either the Baal Chov himself can be podeh, or someone else can be podeh. With like a little bit of money, you can do like a very, normally you have to be podeh with the value of it. But we've learned already that if you're bidyevet, if you were just podeh with a very small amount, you can actually release it from Kedusha. So that's what you do. You put a very small amount of money, you redeem it, and then you pay back the money. Hikdish tishim mana v'haya chovo me'a mana. Okay, the assumption is that we were talking there where the hekdesh was worth more than the chov or the same amount as the chov. But what if the hekdesh was 90 and the chov was 100, meaning the chov was greater than the actual item? So what does he do here? V'haya chovo me'a mana, mosif odinar. Okay, so now, the Baal Chov has to add, okay, there's a big debate about who actually has to add this. Is it the person who's owed the money, who's supposed to get the money, they have to put a little money, or is it the person who owes the money, who has to be mosif another dinar? Upodet ha-nechasim ha-elu, amanat li-tein li-shaktu batal Baal Chov et Chovo. He has to add a little more money, and with that, he can redeem the money. Okay? So here, we're going to see in the Gemara how they deal with this. So first they say, Lama li lemeimar ha-podeh podeh. Why do they say he can redeem this money? Mishum de Rabbi Avahu, de Amar Rabbi Avahu, shelo yomru hekdesh yotzei belo pidyon. Okay, this, you can understand this much more easily according to Rashi, because Rashi says, theoretically, right, you shouldn't have to redeem it at all. It's not even hekdesh. And Rashi's going to explain that what it means here is, just so that people don't think that hekdesh can be redeemed without even doing pidyon. Now the Gemara is going to say, Matnitin, the Mishnah is de lo karavan Shimon ben Gamliel. Why? D'tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Im hayach chovo kineged hekdesho. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel sets up these same two cases and says like this, and we're going to see the second case doesn't match our Mishnah. If it was kineged hekdesho, it was the same amount, then podeh, he can redeem. Vim lav, eino podeh. But if the hekdesh was worth less than the item, then you can't redeem it. Now, why can't you redeem it? And now we're going to understand why our Mishnah thinks you have to add the dinar. Now I'm going to explain it. Because the assumption is, if the item wasn't the value of the loan, it was worth less than the loan or less than the ketubah, then this property wasn't actually lien to that loan, because this property couldn't have covered the cost of what you owed. So therefore, since it was less than, it can't even be redeemed, because you can't even say that it was liened in the first place. Okay? It's a little strange to say this, because you could say it could be this plus something else. Okay?
Maybe values have changed.
That's true, but I think, that's a good question. Maybe the value changed, but it's a good question. They don't seem to relate to that here. So he says, if not, then you can't redeem it at all, because it obviously wasn't leaned. V'Rabbanan, what do Rabbanan say? Ad kama, amarafuna, v'Rabbanan ad kama. Now, to what extent, so it's true, Rabbanan say 90, 100, right? If the item was 90 and the thing was, and you owed 100, then we could still say it was lean, because you could say, you just have to add another 10. And this is why they say, the Baal Chov adds a dinar, he has to add more money, kind of toward the loan. At least that's one of the explanations. Some people say it just means he has to add a little bit. Okay, it's unclear exactly what adding the dinar does, but different from the ratio, where also he had to be podet for a small amount. But Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshet Ad Palga. If it was worth 50 and the loan was for 100, then already, right, when it gets, I don't know what he would say exactly at 50, but it depends how you understand ad, but until 50% of its value. If it's at least worth 50% of the value, then you could say that it was leaned. If it's worth less than 50%, then you can't say it was leaned already. That's already going too far. Okay. New Mishnah. We already mentioned this Mishnah earlier. Even though we say the Chayve Erchin, the Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beit HaMikdash, can come and start taking from your property as collateral for what for your commitment to the temple, Notznim lo mazon 30 yom, we don't take everything of yours, right? We have to leave you with some basic needs. What are your basic needs? Food for 30 days, ksut, 12 chodesh, clothing for 12 months. Some people say this is talking about money to buy clothes. This is a case where you didn't have enough clothes for the next 12 months and they need to leave you money to buy. Nobody actually thinks they're going to take your clothes away. Okay, but there's a debate about that. Mita, a bed, mutzad, right, a bed that's made. It has everything on it that's needed. Sandalav, pair of shoes. Utfilav is tfilin. Here's a fascinating line. We mentioned this before. Lo avalo leishto, only enough for him, but not for his wife. Okay, this a little bit goes back to what we saw earlier about him, right? He wouldn't be chote lo, but he wouldn't lie for himself, even though the assumption is he's only worrying about himself, not other people. Here also, we only leave him for himself, not for his wife and children. Im haya oman, if he was a trades.
Craftsman.
A what?
Craftsman.
A craftsman, that's the word I was looking for, thank you. Notein lo shnei klei omanut mikol mim v'min. We give him two types of each implement, so that in case one breaks, he's got a spare. Harash notenim lo shnei mitzadim. If he was a blacksmith, I forget the words here. What?
Carpenter.
If he was a carpenter, then you give him
two planes and two saws.
Okay. Rabbi Lezer Omer, imaya ikar, noten lo tzimdo. I actually explained this wrong the other day. If he's a farmer, you give him the tzemet bakar, is a pair of animals. He needs a pair of oxen to do the plowing. Chamar, if he's a donkey rider. A donkey driver, right, where he carries stuff on the donkey. Noten lo chamaro, he gets to keep his donkey. Hayalo minachab merubeh uminachab muat. If you have one that was worth more and one that was worth less, ain't omer lo limkorta merubah v'likach mina muat. Sell the greater one and keep the lower valued one. Ela notnim lo shnei minim mina merubah. He gets to have two minim of the more expensive one. V'choshe yesh lo mina muat. And whatever he has from the muat. Hamakdish nechasav ma'alin lo tfilin. If he's makdish's nechasim, he gets to He gets to redeem his tefillin and keep them. Okay, he has to redeem them, Rashi says. But that's what Rashi said, Ma'alim lo tefillav means upodeotam. Okay, since his tefillin are part of his nechassim, theoretically they should be mukdash, but we allow him to redeem those so that he has a pair of tefillin to wear.